to my fast mate to warm me. No, he'll never warm me. He'll warm Fane. The thought makes me cry even harder. But he's trying to be kind, trying to get me to come in to shelter. I relent and follow him back under the stone arch. I slump up against the inside of the arch, weeping, not caring how pathetic I am. Vale's eyes are on fire as he leans back against the opposite wall, facing me.
Tesla, there's something you should know.
He's biting off each word as if this is difficult to say.
I know.
I anguish, wiping at my tears.
I already know.
You love Fane.
No, you don't.
Vale says, his voice ragged.
Jules Christian. He's one of my closest friends, aside from Fane.
I raise my head and gape at him, instantly flooded with vast confusion, not sure I've even heard him correctly.
Jules? You're friends with my Jules?
Yes, your Jules.
The words are tight and bitter, and shame washes over his expression.
I met him at the university. He's a brilliant historian. We've been close friends for almost 3 years.
He pauses, as if momentarily at a loss.
When I saw him that night, when we came for all of you, I knew who you were immediately. Jules talked about you often.
He hesitates, his words stilted, then shakes his head and spits out a short, wry laugh.
He's madly in love with you.
He brings his hand to his forehead and massages his temple.
When he finds out.
He takes a deep breath and looks squarely at me.
I've betrayed him.
My heart speeds up.
Where is he?
I ask, breathless with hope. He narrows his eyes.
I gave him a protective amulet against fire. He's fine. He sent a rune hawk. He's getting ready to cross into Verpetia. I have a small house there. I'm sending him funds.
I grasp at the wall behind me, going lightheaded.
He's all right? Oh, Ancient One, he's alive.
I can barely get the words out. Exhausted relief washes over me.
He's alive. All of us alive.
I glance up at Vale again. His family? Vale's whole face pulls in tight.
They're dead.
The news is like a blow to my gut.
All of them?
He nods, his eyes reddening, glazed with guilty tears.
My mother's fire.
He almost chokes on the words.
Oh, Ancient One, no. His sister, too.
Little Sarla, 10 years old and full of life.
All of them, Tesla.
My throat goes sickeningly tight.
Oh, Vale.
I cry for a while into my hand, until I'm numbed from cold and grief.
Did you send word to him?
I finally ask, my voice haggard.
Does he know they're all gone?
Stricken, Vale nods. Then he looks down at his fast-lined hands and grimaces, sagging against the wall.
He'll never forgive me for taking you away from him.
Vale states with wretched certainty.
How could he?
Vale.
My voice is stuffy and strange from all the crying.
I was going to be fasted to Malkin Bane. You saved me from being taken by
a monster?
I nod.
No.
Vale says, his mouth tight with self-loathing.
All I did was destroy both Jules' happiness and yours.
Anguish streaks across his face.
It's meaningless now, but I'm sorry, Tesla.
Vale, I say, shaking my head to refute him.
It's not how you think. I'm not in love with Jules. I do love him, a great deal, but not in the way he was starting to feel. I trail off, a stab of pain spiking through me. I look down at my hand, my fast-marked palm open and riddled with black lines. I know what this will do to Jules. Vale's brow is tight with confusion.
But you were going to go off with him.
I give a long sigh. I could have made a life with Jules, but I don't know that I would have ever felt anywhere near the way he did about me.
So there was someone else then?
He asks, confused. I give my head a tight shake, my lips trembling. I shrug. No, I had dreams of going to the university, apprenticing there as an apothecary, learning how to use my magic. I pause for a moment, tears welling up again. And I had this romantic idea. I'd meet a Gardnerian scholar there, someone who loves books like I do. Someone kind. I had this stupid story in my mind. There are tears dripping down onto my fast lines, and I absently smear them into the marks. He'd bring me iron flowers, and he'd kiss me in a garden, and then he'd ask me to fast to him. I shrug again. It was foolish. Vale's gone very quiet and still. I'm sorry, I tell him, shaking my head. I should be thanking you, although... I wipe my nose against my forearm and give a hard sniff. I suppose we're helping each other. You saved me from a nightmare of a fastmate. I look at him straight on. And I'm helping you hide your secret. His brow rises.
My secret?
I give him an incredulous look. You and Fane? You... I can feel myself flushing. You fancy each other. Vale lets out a short laugh.
No, we don't.
My face pinches with confusion. What? He sighs.
Fane's like a brother to me.
But he said he touched you. That he knows your affinity like the back of his hand. Irritation flashes across Vale's features.
Yes, well, he has touched me. My arm, my shoulder perhaps, but not like that.
But Vale, I counter. He told me he cares for you. Vale shakes his head.
Tesla, we're close friends.
He swallows, a shadow passing over his expression, and he looks at me askance.
If we weren't closely allied, do you know what would happen to Fane?
I nod gravely. He'd have to leave Gardneria. Pain slashes across Vale's gaze.
Or he'd be imprisoned.
There's a pleading edge to the way he's looking at me now, as if he's begging for my silence. Ancient One, Vale. I breathe. I adore Fane. He's been... My voice breaks. So kind. I'll never forget how good he was to me. I glance down at the soaked but exquisite clothes I'm wearing. The clothes Fane gave me. Vale nods tightly, as if he's been carrying a heavy load. But... I'm cast into confusion. If not Fane, then is there another man? He shoots me a look full of amusement.
Tesla, I don't fancy men.
What? Then why don't you correct all the rumors? His face goes hard.
I don't care what people say about me. I'm too powerful to care, quite frankly. And it keeps away all the insincere attention from the women who want to fast to me for my connections. For my money.
I'm stunned. So, you fancy women, then? He lets out a short laugh and looks at me sidelong, his eyes flaring.
quite ardently.
I'm speechless for a long moment, gaping at him. I thought...
Well, you thought wrong.
I blink at him. So, you fasted to me... to protect me? He gives me a kg sideways look.
Partially.
His face darkens with guilt. He looks down, his jaw tensing, then fixes his eyes on me.
I fasted to you to protect you, of course.
He hesitates, his gaze heating.
And also, because you're the most beautiful woman I've ever seen.
Shock shoots straight down my spine. But I'm at a loss for words. You called me low class, and said that my looks were rustic. Vale winces.
I didn't mean any of that. I felt such a strong pull toward you, and it unnerved me completely.
The heat in his eyes flares.
Gods, Tesla, our affinities. Your fire is constantly calling to mine, but...
His brow tenses.
I thought you belonged to Jules. I was trying to put as much distance between us as I possibly could.
He pauses, his expression taut with remorse.
I'm sorry for what I said. The truth of the matter is, I've grown very fond of you.
His eyes meet mine with unwavering intensity. The fire in his gaze spreads down my neck like a fever. So, I say, still reeling. You never wanted Fane. He shakes his head. And you... like me? He nods.
And you don't love Jules.
Not like that. We stare at each other in rapt silence as the rain pours down around us. Vale's eyes are momentarily blurred, like he's in a confused daze.
Would you like some tea?
Chapter 23. Home. The kitchen is dark and chilled, but I can see carvings of sanded ironwood trees rising up all around me, their stout branches supporting the walls and shelves and forming the rafters above. Vale pulls his wand out and lights three wall lanterns, then points it at a fireplace set in between two tree trunks. I jump back as a huge plume of fire bursts into life, the small kitchen suddenly glowing with orange light. A fierce wave of heat pushes through me, the fire's sparking tendrils almost setting my skirts alight. I look to Vale, alarmed. His eyes reflect the bucking firelight as he points his wand at the fireplace and murmurs spells under his breath. He pushes his palm forward, and the fire retreats back into the confines of the fireplace. Vale eyes it with a look of rattled frustration. His careful control is shattered, and I can feel his affinity knifing in random patterns, straining toward me, just like my affinity is flaring toward him, both of us trying futilely to rein it all in.
Sorry,
he says, glancing at me sidelong. The fire spits and hisses, but it's now confined to the fireplace, and the chill of the room quickly dissipates. But we're both soaked through, far too much for even an out-of-control fire to dry out. I take in his kitchen in one sweeping glance. It's part kitchen, part laboratory, with small stacks of books covering the wooden table in its center, and more books piled on every available shelf. Beakers, retorts, vials and jars of metal powders are scattered about. Containers of small, gleaming stones are mixed in with canisters of tea and herbs and a haphazard assortment of pots and bowls. It's chaotic, but utterly fascinating. Some semblance of control regained, Vale sheathes his wand and shoots me a fierce glance, then distractedly pulls a mug and teapot from a cabinet. He spoons tea leaves from one of the many glass jars into the teapot, pumps water into it, and points his wand at the teapot, murmuring a spell. Within a few seconds, steam is pumping into the air at a furious rate. I stare at him, feeling as if I'm caught in a surreal scene. The son of the Black Witch, as wildly intimidating in appearance as his mother, with soaking wet tendrils of black hair spiked and flopping unevenly all over his head, using his overwhelming level 5 demon slaying powers to make me tea. It's so bizarrely domestic. Vale pours the steaming tea and uneasily hands me the earthenware mug, warm to the edge of burning, and quickly steps back to lean against the counter. He eyes me, his wand held loosely in his hand, as if he doesn't quite know what to do with me. Two black cats slink into the kitchen and twine around his legs, purring in a deep thrum. One is large and fluffy with pale green eyes. The other is short-haired with a yellow gaze and a questioning cock to its head. "You've cats," I marvel.
"Yes, well,"
he says, distracted, as if he's carrying on a furious conversation with himself that's sapping all his focus, his hand gripping the counter behind him so hard his knuckles are white.
"I'm partial to them."
"Do they have names?" I ask. He nods, his lip quirking.
"Vornin and Strilyan."
"Hi, Elfin." I'm surprised and oddly delighted by this. It's so un-Gardnerian to use another language for things. "Ah," I nod. "Midnight and... what's Vornin?"
"Cole,"
he says, his eyes hot on me. I nod, then sigh deeply. My clothes are soaked through, Vale. He blinks at me for a moment, thrown into confusion.
"Yes, of course."
He looks around like he's absently searching for a solution.
"We've no clothes for you."
He immediately stops himself, a spot of color appearing high on his cheeks. He looks away. I suddenly realize that brash, suffer-no-fools Vale can be shy. He swallows and looks back at me.
"Of course, I'll send for your things."
Sadness rocks through me. I think of our tiny cottage, and all our meager possessions. Mama's needlework, the small bear I sewed for Wren, a pretty camisole I embroidered with tiny pink roses, all of it rendered to ash. And our cat. My throat feels tight and raw as tears prick my eyes. I blink them back. I have no things to send for, Vale. Everything was destroyed. His brow tenses as he searches my eyes, his fire flaring hot, angry on my behalf.
"Well,"
he says tightly, the word clipped.
"That will change."
He says it with an assurance that's so rock solid, it momentarily cuts through my misery and softens the edges of my pain. Vale looks around again, thinking.
"Perhaps, just for a bit, you could wear one of my tunics."
He swallows, his eyes darting over me, and there's heat in his gaze. He quickly pulls back on it, drawing it firmly in. My heart hammers against my ribs. I'm suddenly aware that I'm alone, in a completely isolated place, with a powerful young man. A man I'm fasted and sealed to. A man who desires women and not men. I take an almost imperceptible step back, my internal wall of fire rearing up. His head gives a small jerk as he straightens, his gaze now edged with concern. He looks closely at me, then walks toward the spiraling ironwood staircase at the edge of the kitchen, stops and turns back to me.
"I'll show you to your room. You can take off those wet things."
He swallows, his heat momentarily coursing outward, only to be quickly tamped back down. I set my tea on the counter and tentatively follow him as he starts up the stairs. He could force me to do anything he wants. On some level, I know my alarm is unfounded, but it spikes just the same. With each step up the staircase, I become more and more nervous. The upstairs is cast in shadow, but I can see his body straight and strong in front of me. The smell of him wafts back on the air. damp sweat and wool mixed in with the clean odor of wood smoke, and something distinctly male. It sets my affinity fire flaring, and my irrational fear edging higher at the same time. Vale reaches the top, turns around, and looks surprised when he notices how much distance I've put between us. He lights the sole lamp in the short hall with his wand, and pushes the door before us open, stepping back with formal politeness as I reach the top floor. I hesitate, then peek inside the room, my unease mounting as I take in the sight of a canopied bed. Large enough for two.
"This is my bedroom,"
he tells me, his brow knit in concern and confusion, his fire giving off a heat that's turned distractingly, overwhelmingly sensual.
"It's your bedroom now,"
he tells me, his fire brushing against me in slow strokes.
I'll.
He glances back down the stairs.
"There's a small room just off the kitchen. When weather's bad, Edwin stays in that room. I'll sleep there."
I round on him, stunned. "I can't take your room." He blinks at me, as if I'm uttering nonsense.
"I can't have my fast mate sleeping in such cramped quarters."
My fast mate? A disconcerting heat streaks through me at his use of the word, and relief at his reserved and thoughtful manner, so at odds with his aggressive fire. "Vale, you shouldn't stay in cramped quarters either," I insist. "I can't possibly take your room." His jaw tenses.
"I'll be quite comfortable."
"But all your things..."
"Our things,"
he insists.
"They're our things now."
I'm thrown by this additional display of chivalry. Nervous amusement bubbles up within me. "Even your breeches?" My eyes go wide, and I flush hotly. "I meant your clothing." I stumble. I'm sorry. I'm horrified, my flush deepening. It struck me as funny. He's gone still, watching me with narrowed eyes.
"I doubt they'd fit you, Tesla. But you're welcome to them."
His mouth turns up in a subtle smile. I take a deep sigh, resigned to my scarlet face. "Thank you, Vale." His mouth lifts in amusement.
"You're welcome, Tesla."
He cocks his head.
"I will have a wardrobe ordered for you. Until then, there's always my breeches."
A smile dances on my mouth, then widens. Vale's face lights into a grin that mirrors my own, our affinity fires suddenly loosened and curling around each other. I realize I hadn't yet seen a smile on his face that didn't hold withering disdain or barely concealed malice. His green eyes are lit up with delight and affection. "He's handsome," I muse, flustered. "So distractingly handsome, and all that fire."
"Let me just grab some dry clothing,"
Vale says, a bit falteringly. He shoots me another small, tentative smile, and I nod and step back. He's careful not to touch me as he passes, even though his fire brushes against me. He lights a bedside lantern, strides over to the closet, and quickly grabs a tunic and pants from a line of uniformly dark gardenerian garb. Then he lights the room's wood stove with his wand, shoots me another small smile, and stalks out, his fire trailing behind him. I close the door behind him and turn the latch, then lean against the door, my palms pressed flat behind me. My heart is pounding, my breathing uneven. His presence is overwhelming. I swear I can still feel the edges of his heat from a floor away. I look around, feeling decadent in this new, private knowledge of him. Mage Vale Gardner's bedroom. It's as chaotic as the kitchen. His bed looks hastily made up, with deep green blankets over white sheets. Sturdy ironwood posts support a plain, forest green canopy. Ironwood trees, like the ones downstairs, flow out from the walls, their branches supporting the roof in an intricate tangle, more branches supporting shelves in their hollows. Half the room pushes out into a semicircle that hangs over the lower story, and windows reach from floor to ceiling, continuing up to form a glass roof. A small side door opens onto an arcing balcony that looks out over the storming ocean. Rain pounds the glass, the wind rattling the panes in violent fits and starts. A table is set up against the wall of windows. It's covered with books, as well as a mariner's sextant, compass, scope, and half-unrolled maps. A library of haphazardly arranged volumes is set into the surrounding walls. He's quite the artist, Vale, and I find his drawings everywhere. Maps he's drawn, carefully detailed. Affinity patterns done up in multiple colors of ink. I can see he's tried to fit streams of elements together in elaborate geometric designs. I pick up one of his patterns and study it, carefully turning it this way and that, and immediately spot the errors in what he's working out. The equations worked in a firm, slashing hand along the edges. I can see the pent-up fire in his very handwriting. It's very similar to my own. Weapons are scattered about, some even hanging from the walls. A number of swords, knives, 3 metal stars with runes engraved into them. I pick one of the stars up, the metal cold against my fingers. I gently touch the star's edge and draw in a sharp breath as it cleanly cuts through my skin, a small line of blood appearing, the sting following shortly afterward. On Vale's bedside table sits a small tower of books. There's a slim white volume on top, covered in complicated Alsiger lettering. I set the insanely sharp star down and go to his bed, sitting on its edge as I take the small volume in hand. I flip through it, making out scattered words in the flowing Alsiger script. Poetry. And not just any poetry. Love poems. I listen for Vale downstairs, awed by this secret discovery. Vale's a romantic. I momentarily forget how damp I am, set down the book, and take in the riot of book titles on shelves all around me, my attention set alight to be in the presence of so many volumes. Grimoires, a number of Alsiger books, books on language, history, science, apothecary medicine, mathematics, military history, shipbuilding, metallurgy, and more grimoires. I make my way over to his closet and peer inside at the row of tunics. All black silk or wool, well made without ornamentation. I finger one of them thoughtfully. I hear his heavy steps downstairs and give a nervous jolt, releasing the fabric in my hands. He's just below me, in Edwin's bedroom, probably sliding out of his wet clothes. My breathing quickens. I pull one of his tunics out, and a pair of pants, giving them an appraising look for size. I find some twine on his work table and cut it to size with a jewel-handled knife. Standing before the wood stove, glancing worriedly toward the door, I clumsily reach back to loosen my tunic's lacing. The wet laces have grown hard and tight, and loosening them takes some time. Finally, I peel off my soaked tunic, camisole and long skirt, hanging them over the backs of chairs to dry. I stand in front of the wood stove in just my pantalettes, my shivers subsiding as the stove's warmth courses through me, quickly drying the skin of my chest. I'm suddenly aware of the uncurtained window, my naked chest, my nipples standing out in hard points, goose flesh rising on my chilled skin. I hastily slide Vale's tunic on over me, the silk smooth over my breasts. His tunic is loose, and I have to roll up the sleeves, but it fits me like a short dress. The pants are disastrously ill-fitting, slightly tight in the hips, but huge in the waist. They pucker as I cinch them tight with twine, wrapping another piece of twine around my waist to secure his tunic. I hunt around and find a drawer of black woolen socks. I pull a pair on over my toes, the socks loose and bunching up, his feet so much larger than mine. A hot thrill courses through me to be dressed in the same fabric he slides over his own muscular frame. I sit down on his bed and run my hand over the covers. He sleeps here, the man I'm now fasted to. I try to imagine it. Serious, intense Vale, snuggled in under these very covers. his face blank and open in sleep, his black hair tousled on the pillow. What does he look like when he sleeps? I realize that I already know this. I remember him sleeping in Fane's tent, staying there with me, all night. I remember how he looked, troubled and upset. Glancing at the door, I listen closely for him. His steps thud across the downstairs floor, crossing directly below me. I lean over and smell his pillow, briefly laying my body in the same spot I imagine he lays his. An exciting warmth courses over me. I can smell his scent on the wrinkled linen, fresh wood just catching flame on a chill autumn day, smoke on the crisp air. A hint of warm musk. I like it, I realize. I like the smell of him. Reluctantly, I set the pillow back, smooth the sheets to hide the evidence of my curiosity, and go to join him downstairs. He's in dry clothes as I haltingly make my way down to the kitchen, his two large socks slippery on my feet against the polished ironwood stairs. Vale watches me as I descend. He's leaning against the kitchen counter, his lips slightly parted, staring as if I'm a breathtakingly beautiful vision dressed in the finest silks and gems, coming down a stately flight of stairs to a lavish ball. Not an exhausted Lower River girl with damp hair, wearing ill-fitting men's clothing and bunchy socks. His eyes and his fire flicker over me. He straightens, formal again, and blinks at me as if in a daze.
May I show you the rest of the house?
One of his cats jumps onto the counter, and he idly pets it.
My library's through here,
he says, pushing an adjacent door open to reveal a cozy room walled with bookcases, arching windows overlooking the ocean. There's a couch placed up against the windows with a stack of books on one side. It's good you have a library, I archly comment, glancing back toward the tome-laden kitchen table. There's such a dearth of books around here. He laughs and shoots me a sidelong glance of amusement.
No dearth of books. You've had a dearth of food, though,
he says.
I'll show you the pantry, in case you're hungry for something.
I follow him through a door at the far corner of the kitchen that cuts into the stone of the surrounding rock, the temperature chilling as we walk down a short, cavernous path. Vale grabs a hanging lantern and quickly lights it with his wand, the guttering light flickering over the stone, over us. I'm struck by a surreal sense that I'm in a dream, following a powerful level 5 mage into his pantry. Vale opens a wooden door that has a small door for the cats hewn into the bottom. I immediately gape as I enter, transfixed on the sight before me. The entire room is lined with deep shelves and large barrels of grain. Carrots and root vegetables are packed in sawdust on the floor. A row of shelves houses wheels of cheese and a large variety of preserved fruits and vegetables in glass jars. Dried meat, fish, and sausages hang from the ceiling. The cats flow in and wind around the room.
They keep the vermin at bay,
Vale idly comments, picking up and stroking the short-haired cat. The cat purrs loudly in response and pushes her head up against the sharp line of Vale's jaw, making it clear Vale's affection for these cats veers beyond the practical.
It's not a lot,
he apologizes, looking around.
Rather modest fare, but I hope you'll find it sufficient.
I stare at him, staggered. It's more food put together in one place, in one home, than I have ever seen in my entire life. Like a whole market full of food. I reach behind me for the edge of a shelf for support, slumping against it. Is he going to eat like this? I ask, my voice gone low, feeling suddenly lightheaded.
Oh, good gods, no, he says. My house in Valgard is much larger. I have my own cook there. She'll let them draw up a menu, their favorite foods and so forth. With an eye for health, of course. For your brother.
He gives me a significant look. It's over,
all over. Our struggle for food.
The crushing weight of our poverty is lifting so quickly that the world tilts beneath me, the very ground shifting. The struggle of years and years coming to an abrupt end.
We never ate like this,
I tell him, gaping at a hanging smoked ham.
I don't think you understand.
I try to swallow, my throat gone dry. I stare at a row of berry preserves directly before me.
They stopped selling to us, so many of the Celts. They wouldn't sell to crows anymore. Jules would bring us things, but we didn't have money for much. Dried peas, barley, beans, cheap food. I used to glean for the damaged vegetables that no one wanted, but the farmers stopped allowing it, and soon Doveshire outlawed it, for our kind anyway. I've been through refuse bins, Vale. I've stolen food a few times. There were times it got that bad. My legs feel wobbly, and my hand slides down to find a soft, solid surface. I look down to find the largest bag of grain I've ever seen. I own this. Ren has food. More food than he could ever eat.
Tesla, are you all right?
He's sick.
I choke out. The floodgates suddenly flung wide open, a storm of emotion coursing through me.
Ren's sick. He's been sick a long time.
I know,
Vale says. He sets the cat down and looks at me closely.
The red grip. I left orders for my family's physician to tend to him. Fane will make sure he's given obsidian tonic this week.
All the blood drains from my face, and I stagger down until I'm sitting on the floor.
He'll be cured of it. Just like that. He'll live.
Tesla?
I bring my hand to my eyes, overtaken by a staggering relief.
Oh, Ancient One. Vale, thank you so much. Oh, Ancient One, thank you.
We're fasted, Tesla,
he says, his voice low and gentle, tinged with confusion.
Of course I'd do anything for you.
His noble sentiment and kindness send shockwaves through me. I cry hot tears of overwhelming gratitude into my hand. Vale is quiet for a long moment. Then I hear him come closer, kneeling down before me.
He'll be cured,
he says, his voice near me now, his fire coursing steady.
Completely cured. He'll have the best of everything.
Where are they now?
I ask him, my face wet with tears.
I suspect they're both in Valgard by now, wanting for nothing. We'll visit them at week's end if you'd like.
I can never thank you enough,
I cry, breaking down again.
Ever. Thank you. Thank you, Vale. Thank you.
I wipe at my tears with my tunic sleeve, realizing too late how messy I'm getting his clothing.
I know you've money, Vale, but still, obsidian tonic. It's so wildly expensive.
He gives a short laugh.
Tesla, I'm extremely rich. And now you are too.
I nod, trying to catch my breath.
Of course, your mother's money.
He pulls his head up sharply.
No, my money. Tesla, I cleared the entire Salish Pass of Kraken. There's a hefty bounty for that. 3 years on and off at sea killing the vile things. Plus, as a wind mage dealing with storms and so forth, I've a fair bit of wind power, Tesla, just like you do. So I've more than enough of my own money. None of it from my mother.
I'm sorry, I stammer, thrown. I meant no offense.
Vale sits down against the shelf opposite me, the hard edges of his expression softening.
No offense taken.
He takes a long breath and lets it out, studying me.
Tesla, you've been carrying a heavy load for far too long. Let me help you.
His large green-eyed cat jumps up into my lap, purring. Weeping, I stroke the cat's silky fur, and it spins around to form itself into a contented, sleepy ball. A leaden exhaustion presses down on me. I shake my head from side to side.
I've been so lonely, Vale.
The confession catches me off guard, but I'm starved for companionship. It seems to startle him, too, as if this moment of intimacy has pierced a constant feeling of isolation for the both of us.
You're not alone anymore,
he says, his fierce eyes hot on me.
You're safe here, and you never have to be alone again.
Chapter 24 Blue Lightning. I'm exhausted, but oddly restless when I return to Vale's bedroom. I pull off Vale's woolen breeches and climb into his bed, nestling in under the covers, dressed now only in his tunic, my pantalettes, and socks. Dark rain streams down the windows, but it's warm and cozy in here, with a roasting fire crackling in the wood stove. Vale's short-haired cat, Vornin, jumps up on the bed to curl at my feet. I turn, taking in the tower of books he has on his bedside table. The volumes are stacked unevenly in a way that seems quite precarious. I carefully pick up the Alfsiger poetry book and the language translation dictionary just under it, then puzzle through the volume for a good long while by the flickering lamplight. It's a good distraction, trying to translate the complicated Alfsiger language, and it slightly dampens the turbulent firestorm churning inside me. I notice the book is heavily creased on one page in particular. I try opening the book several times to see where the pages open up to on their own, and always come back to this poem.
Solilinir.
Loneliness. I spend a while piecing together the translation, the poem full of metaphors for painful solitude. A winter moon, a frozen lake, a single candle in a midnight forest. Vale's steps sound out below, and my heart quickens. Is he as aware of me as I am of him, even separated by a whole floor? Cheeks flushed, I go back to translating, but eventually my eyes grow too heavy for the task, and I clumsily reach to set the book back on Vale's teetering tower of volumes. Half the tower falls onto the bed, a heavy history of the Urusk clunking painfully against my shoulder. My eyes watering from the painful blow, I inwardly curse at the ceiling, then turn back to the destroyed tower of books, now cut in half. Another slim volume rests on the small tower's top, its cover a tapestry of rioting colors, its spine embossed and hand-gilded. Annoy water god and goddess passionately embrace in the center of the riotous design, their hair made of the ocean's waves. I immediately think of Fane's tent and his cacophony of Ishkart tapestries. It seems so out of place among all the scholarly volumes, and my curiosity wins out over my crushing fatigue. I set it aside, restack Vale's volumes, then pick up the exotic book and flip through it. My eyes widen as I take in the images that make up the volume. Each print depicts a divine couple, their water hair wild and flowing. They're dressed in intricately embroidered yet conservative clothing, but their tunics are unfastened, cast into disarray. A surge of hot, titillating shock sizzles through me as I realize that the couples are copulating, their joinings depicted in shockingly graphic detail. I close the book quickly, heart thudding, a bolt of sparking heat flashing through me, as if I'm committing a salacious crime and will be discovered at any moment. I look nervously to the door, furtive, hunching down. I bring up my knees to hide the book on my lap, ready to slip it under the covers at the slightest sound, ears primed for any sign of Vale coming up the stairs. But the house remains silent. I sneak another peek at the book, a hot flush starting on my face, streaking down my neck. A warm, wildly disconcerting tension rises between my legs. I tense my thighs against it and keep looking. I've never seen anything remotely like this. Where did Vale come across such a book? I flip to the inside cover and find Fane's artistic script.
To Vale, so you'll know where to put it. As always, Fain.
I flip through the book again, and like the poetry book, it opens easily to one heavily creased page. It's clear that this page has been returned to again and again, like a fly to a sticky sweet. It depicts a woman straddling a man, the man on his back. She's riding him like a horse. I stare, mouth agape, both fascinated and shocked. Is this what he likes? I hear Vale's footsteps moving toward the stairs. I panic, fumbling with the book, dropping it on the floor, a giddy, nervous tension flashing through me. I scramble to reach it, then thrust the volume deep under the pillow behind me, my heart hammering, sure that he'll be knocking on the door at any moment. But the knock never comes. Instead, I hear the downstairs door slam shut. I go to the window and peek out to see Vale stalking into the night, the storm moving off, the rain lessening. A full moon fitfully pokes through the fast-moving clouds, thunder still rumbling in the distance. He's thrown off his tunic, the skin of his back glimmering a faint emerald in the dark. His wand tight in his fist, he follows the path down to the beach, then drops down on one knee in the sand, and throws blue lightning out across the water. The bolt's crackling intensity casts blue light over the entire world, clear into the bedroom. Vale stands and stalks up and down the beach, and I can just make out his expression, fierce and full of a tense frustration. He stops and hurls his arm out, lightning branching clear up to the clouds, piercing through them, sending more branches of lightning bolting sideways through adjacent clouds and then scything down to the ocean below. The whole world pulses blue. I watch him for a long time, my forehead pressed against the cold glass, in awe of his power, the ferocity of his magic. My breath sends foggy puffs to coat the glass's surface, rendering Vale's unsettled form misty. My eyelids grow heavy, and I fall asleep for a few seconds at a time, jerking back awake at each new crack of his lightning. Eventually, I rise and take one last look at him as he furiously throws out bolt after bolt after bolt. Then I slip under the warm covers of his bed, firelight and blue light pulsing over me. I turn and inhale Vale's enticing scent deeply, pull myself into a tight ball and surrender to sleep. I'm running through the dark woods, twigs cutting at my face, my heart racing, my panicked breathing loud in my ears. I'm prey, and they're after me, the huge axe paladin and the Icarol demon. The axe paladin's hand clasps tight around my arm, jerking me back, blunt nails digging into my skin as the Icarol looks on, the creature's demonic fire coursing through me with churning ferocity. I cry out as the axe paladin throws me to the ground and falls on me, the demon close on his heels. I struggle and scream as the axe paladin pins my arms down and looks me over with manic eyes, excited by my fear and desperate struggle.
Tesla!
Someone shouts my name from somewhere, far away. I scream louder, wrench my wrist free, and punch the axe paladin in the face with all my strength. My knuckles explode with pain, and the scene shatters around me. I'm thrust into immediate, wild confusion. There's a half-naked man before me, cradling his face, one hand around my wrist as I buck and struggle and flail against him. He pulls sharply away, and I wrench my hand from his grip, scuttling toward the back of the bed, wildly disoriented.
"I'll kill you if you come near me!"
I snarl at him, violence coursing through me like black fire, both hands clenched into fists.
"I swear I will!"
I turn, grab up a short sword from the head of the bed, and pull it from its sheath with a metallic screech.
"Great gods, put down the sword, Tesla!"
Vale's voice is muffled, and he's doubled over, his hand tight over his nose, his palm out to halt me.
"I'm not trying to attack you. You were dreaming."
He pulls his hand briefly away, blood all over his face, all over his palm, streaking down his chest. I hesitate, heart hammering and sword held high. He curses in Elfsigur, then puts his hand back over his nose, pivots and lies across the foot of the bed, arching his head backward.
"What are you doing?"
I cry. He glares at me.
"Trying to stop the bleeding," Put down the damn sword.
His voice is muffled but stern, and it cuts through my senseless panic. Everything falls together. The dream. The terrible dream. I'm not in the woods. It was all just a dream. I take a deep, shuddering breath, my panic slowly receding. I lower the sword. I punched him. I punched Vale. It's a shock to see him sprawled out over his bed, lean and muscular, the tops of his hip bones jutting up from his pants, his chest streaked with blood, his head thrown backward, long neck arcing. His half-naked state pushes my alarm higher.
Why are you unclothed?
The question comes out as an unfortunate shriek.
I heard you screaming,
he grinds out, pinching his nose tightly.
I didn't throw on my tunic. I just grabbed my wand.
He holds up his wand and flicks it idly in the air.
I quickly realized you were dreaming and I was trying to wake you.
I huddle at the top of the bed, trembling and hating myself for it.
Can I have a handkerchief?
He asks.
Top drawer, side table.
I fish out a handkerchief from the drawer and hand it to him with shaking hands. He takes it with a wary glance, keeping his head back. I eye the blood on his chest. That's a lot of blood, I say apologetically. He throws me an incredulous look.
Will you hit me really hard?
I'm sorry, I say in a small voice. He lets out a sigh that's muffled by the handkerchief and shakes his head, glowering at the ceiling.
It's not just because of you. I'm prone to this.
Getting punched? He coughs out a laugh, then cringes.
No, nosebleeds. Whenever I pull air magic, if I pull too much, my nose bleeds. It's an incredible nuisance. Amuses feign to no end.
There's a dark bruise blooming under his eye. Did I break your nose? I ask, horrified. He sighs.
I don't know.
Do you have Arncian tonic?
I ask tentatively. It's good for this sort of thing.
No, I do not.
He says drolly.
Being a level 5 mage, I'm not often punched.
I hug my knees and wipe my residual tears away. The larger cat jumps up on the bed and then onto Vale's stomach. Vale's muscles tense in response. Then he shakes his head, as if resigned to mayhem, and strokes the cat. After a few minutes, he sits up, still pinching his nose with the handkerchief. Slowly, he pulls it away, dabbing his nose, studying the soiled cloth.
Am I still bleeding?
He asks me, both of his eyes anchored by dramatic bruising, though much worse on the left side. I don't think so, I say, shrinking down, chastened. I'm so sorry, Vale. Vale nods and looks around. There's a smattering of blood on the white sheets.
Well,
he says to me with a sigh and a weary glance.
Looks like we bloodied the sheets after all.
I gape at him, a bit put off. Vale purses his lips, as if horrified with himself.
I'm sorry, Tesla. That was in poor taste.
I shake my head. No, don't apologize. I glance sidelong at his bruised eyes. I suppose this isn't any man's dream of a ceiling night.
Punched and bleeding all over the bed? Not really.
He readily agrees.
It does put a new spin on Sanguinin, though.
I look to him sheepishly. Both your eyes. I bring my finger up to trace under my own eyes. They're blackened. It's really bad on one side. People will think I fought you off me. He shoots me a level stare.
You did, in fact, fight me off you.
I sigh deeply and shoot him a rueful look.
Well, this should be entertaining when we rejoin polite society.
He arches his brow at me.
Don't you think?
No consummation lines. Vale with two black eyes and a potentially broken nose. I'm sorry. I say again, the words sounding hollow. Vale absently folds the handkerchief over in his lap, and I notice how graceful and long his fingers are.
There's so many rumors about me already.
he says with a resigned breath. Why not add a few more? He sends me a wry smile.
I like you, Vale, I blurt out, shock spinning through me at my own admission. He bursts out into a short laugh, then winces, reaching up to massage the bridge of his nose.
Thank you, Tesla. Thank you for clarifying.
His eyes light on something just behind me and flare wide open, his fire surging in sudden chaotic streaks. I turn and am horrified to see Fane's book peeking out from under my pillow. The light in here is dim, but it's easy to see the deep flush now coloring Vale's cheeks.
It was a present, he tells me, looking mortified. From Fane, in jest. He gave it to me a few years back.
I'm flushing, too. I can feel the heat of it on my cheeks, down my neck. I hug my knees, looking anywhere but at him. I've never seen anything like that. Ever. He nods and swallows audibly.
Neither had I.
He looks to the ceiling, as if wanting to be swallowed up by it. I eye him, brow raised. Those pictures. Is that what you want? He takes a deep breath, then eyes me narrowly.
Tesla, I've had about as much experience with these matters as you. I've no idea what's even logistically possible in that book. I seriously doubt some of it.
He trails off, his ruddy flush deepening. I'm beyond embarrassed, but also painfully curious. You like the one with the woman riding the man, like he's a pony? He shrugs and looks sidelong at me.
It's interesting.
He lets out a deep sigh.
Not all people are as staid as ours. The Noi, they're more open-minded.
He motions toward the book.
You must be curious. I certainly was. You can look at it, if you'd like.
When I don't respond, he gives me a level look.
We're fasted, Tesla. No sense having secrets from each other. There it is.
He points at the book.
My big secret. I own that book. I think, in the realm of secrets, it's quite minor.
It's wildly improper. And you looked at every single page, I remind myself. Vale spits out a laugh.
So is your having a wand, last I checked.
This is entirely different. He cocks his brow.
Is it?
I glance sidelong at the book. So, I say tentatively, you haven't been with anyone? He spits out a laugh.
Women are terrified of me.
His mouth gives a bitter twist.
Apparently, I project a great deal of fire when I kiss. It scares them.
How many women have you kissed, then? I trace a line of stitching on his quilt, feigning disinterest.
3.
I meet his eyes, waiting for more. He lets out a long sigh.
There was a Cilician girl. I was 16 and at sea for the first time, on board as their wind mage. The crew knew I'd never...
He gestures with one hand, a loose circular motion.
So they paid the girl and snuck her in with me. I'd been sleeping. She slithered under the covers, right on top of me. I thought I was dreaming. Well, I kissed her. Sent fire through her.
He looks down at the wand in his lap, rolling it in his fingers.
It's hard for me to control my fire when I'm that close to a woman.
He looks at me, gaze intense, color burning high on his cheeks. I flush. What happened? He shrugs.
She ran away, yelling that she'd been burned by a demon.
His mouth gives a cynical twist, but I can sense his discomfort and how fitful his fire's grown.
I heard them outside, telling her that they'd already paid her. They threw her back into my room.
What did you do?
Once she calmed down, we played cards most of the evening.
He takes in my surprised look.
Well, I wasn't about to throw myself at her.
And I didn't want them to abuse the poor girl.